Hey, good morning, everyone, and welcome to the New Media Show. My name is Todd Cochran, and we've got a great show lined up for you today. Of course, I want to give a warm welcome to my co-host, Rob Greenlee. Good morning, Rob. How are you?
Doing fantastic, Todd. It's sunny in spring in Seattle, and all the flowers are out, and all the weeds are out, too. So that gives you a little glimpse into what my day looks like.
So I take it the missus is going to have you mowing and weeding today. So,
yeah, that's right.
You know, that's one thing about Hawaii that continues year round, 365 days a year. So, but when I take a moment, of course, welcome our guest this morning, Francesco from, CEO of Spreaker's on this morning. Good morning, Francesco. How are you?
Good morning, Todd. I'm very good. Thank you for having me here.
Yeah. And, you're actually Skyping in from East Germany. So, it's evening there where you're getting ready to have dinner. I'm getting ready to have breakfast. So, we're on the opposite end of the spectrums. Rob, did you have a good week down in LA?
Yeah, it was a good week.
Okay. All right, cool. Yeah, I guess, you and I will be seeing each other in person midweek next week, I guess. So that'll be fun for a couple hours at least. Are you there, Rob?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, I had the stream playing at the same time, and it was playing you talking twice over the top of each other, so I couldn't hear you. Sorry. I had to close that window.
You know, that can kind of be confusing is when you have, two voices in your ears, the same voice, and they're probably about 6 or 7 seconds apart, and you're like, that just your brain doesn't compute, does it?
Yeah, exactly. It totally short changes or short fires or whatever you want to call it. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was telling Francesco before we got started here, I don't know, I probably told you the status of my weight loss thing. I ended up with 14 pounds down after, 13 to 14 pounds down after my 10-day dealio, so now I'm on an every other day program. But getting ready to get on an airplane, I don't know how well I'm going to be able to adhere to my weight loss plan on my trip next week. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, it's actually really really hard to stick to any kind of a good diet if you're in airports a lot, which I am now, and my diet has definitely gone downhill.
And you know what else is because, if you've had a long day and it's you're tired, you just want to grab something quick instead of, sitting down at some restaurant. And usually the quick stuff is not the healthy stuff. And
that's right.
So that definitely impacts. But of course, with a jet setter on the line here, he well knows that as well. As the airport food is... I don't know. I think once you get outside the United States, the airport food seems to get better. But definitely in the U.S., that's just the same old choices usually. San Francisco's not bad, but LAX is pretty bad.
Well, and I thought that we'd all be traveling a lot less because of mediums like this, right, where we could talk to people much easier, but people are still jumping on airplanes. All these airplanes flying around are still jam-packed with people.
Yeah, and I think it's just that face-to-face thing, too, is important sometimes, and that's part of the reason why I'm making this run this next week is do that face-to-face. But yep. Anyway, let's get the topic at hand. Let's get caught up. What's new over at Spreaker?
A lot of things. I think last time we spoke was probably almost a year ago.
Yeah.
Yep.
And we had just announced our partnership with IR Radio, and you guys had actually a lot of questions on behalf of the fellow podcasters on what this meant for content producers, the good things and the bad things. And we have moved on a lot since then. What we're trying to do is always trying and combine our passion, which is trying and create this new media, this new type of radio, with the fact that we need to make this into a business. So at the same time, we're releasing new and interesting stuff and trying to convert more people to use our product. So I don't really know. I mean, a year is a very, very long time. But during this year, we released two new versions of our mobile applications, which are targeted towards content producers and consumers at the same time. So you can both create podcasts on the go and listen. So we created a whole new Android application. We created an app for Windows Phone, Windows Phone 8. And we also revamped our iOS, both on iPhone and iPad application. We allowed our users to actually create their own mobile application, both on Android and on iPhone, so that their audience and their listeners can actually use a branded application to join the program, and a lot of the stuff actually. One very interesting thing that we made was the ability to for people who are actually hosting their content elsewhere to easily import their existing podcasts through our RSS feed importer into Spreaker, so that they can use Spreaker just as a yet another distribution channel, which is something that our users were asking for, because a lot of our users actually are using more than one platform at the same time, and they told us, hey, you know, it would be beneficial for us to have all of our content on your platform, just to use your distribution. And so we did it, and yeah, that's basically what we're doing. We listen, we talk to people, we figure out what we can fit into our roadmap, and we develop it.
You know, setting those development priorities, I deal with that, you know, every day, and that's the hard choices. If you had unlimited resources, you know, you would do all of them. So do you guys kind of have like just this running list of features people have asked for, and as you get more requests for a specific feature, it moves it up the feature list? Or how do you guys basically ping through that?
I think that's really the secret sauce. I mean, we're a small company, like a startup company, so the team is small, and there's so many stakeholders here. So on one side, we have our users that we tend to listen to a lot, and then they have some requests. On the other side, I mean, even our shareholders and investors have different requests, and would like to see the business growing in maybe some slightly different directions. And all this has to fit into our prioritization mechanism. So at the end of the day, what we do is we do a lot of these meetings basically. Every couple of weeks or so, we just sit in a room, me and my co-founders and my CTO, and we decide if we're going to stick to the scheduling that we did, or we're going to change things again. And I think this is something you can only do if you're a startup company or a small company. We literally are able to change our priorities and schedule every 2 weeks if something new comes out. And our market has been very, very active in the past months. And the exciting thing is that the audio space in general is changing. It's changing very quickly. And this is yet another big motivation for us to do what we do, because we have fun. So sometimes it's stressful to change priorities, because you cannot make everyone happy. Different people tend to see different things, and they complain if you don't do what they want. So this is the stressful part, but the nice part is that we have a lot of ideas and a lot of stuff that we want to do, and we just need to find a way to put everything in line.
Yeah, it's the, you know, and sometimes you have a very small minority that is complaining the loudest on some obscure feature, and you know, it just drives you crazy, because you know, do a release and they just, you know, that small group just pounds you, you know, and, you know, and it's just the way things work. But that's kind of what we're even seeing in the country right now, is small minorities, you know, just screaming so loud, you know, that they definitely are heard, and oftentimes it results in action. But Rob, I'm sure you deal with a little of that at your office too, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely probably experienced it more working on Windows Phone and the Zune area, where, you know, there was always some very, very vocal users out there that would really know how to use the social media platforms to really amplify their feature requests and even tweet directly to, you know, VPs in the company, and that would trickle down to me, and then I would see it as well, and then I would kind of respond, and it kind of creates this kind of cycle of concern. And I guess, I mean, it can be a good thing too, and it you know, larger companies, specifically Microsoft, has an area on their website where you can suggest features. I mean, it's a very proactive kind of thing, and I think more software companies need to think about this stuff and not necessarily be driven by the loudest commentator on the social platforms, but to really aggregate feedback and feature requests from a larger group of users to make those you know, appropriate choices. And it becomes pretty clear over time what you need to improve and what kind of features you know, a good solid number of your users want, right? And it's also, there's a lot of common sense that kind of goes into that too. But yeah, I wanted to also ask about kind of the whole Windows Phone platform. You know, you guys came out with an app for that. It still seems that a lot of the developer community still doesn't quite want to fully support Windows Phone and Windows quite yet, and was just kind of curious your thoughts on that.
It's mixed. We see the numbers and the figures, of course. It's not as big as iOS or Android.
Sure.
I mean, we just see the visitors on our website that come from mobile, so we know that the percentage of people who are on Windows Phone, but it's definitely in the number three platform. It's growing, and the good news is that we're originally from Italy, and we tend to have a good traction there because that's originally where we launched the product and where it got its initial growth. And Windows Phone has a very, very high market penetration in Italy, so it made sense for us to go and look into it. The problems that we had, as you said, is that it's not easy to find skilled developers on the platform, and we didn't have the time and the resources to do that internally. So we outsourced the development of the application. We did all the design in house, and we outsourced the development. And it didn't work well. We started working with the developer. We worked for, I think, 4 months. And at the end, he actually booted us. He said that he didn't want to go through with this. So we had to find yet another one. And the timing was like getting out of control. So we came out with an app, which is already probably a couple of versions behind the other two apps, both Android and iPhone, because we cannot keep up with the same pace. So right now we are trying to figure out if it does make sense for us to bring the development of a Windows Phone internal, because I mean, we always have had bad experiences with outsourcing. I think it's probably one of the reasons is that our product is evolving continuously, so it's not easy to have clear specifications and a clear idea that you have to communicate to a developer at zero at the beginning. So, and we mm-hmm. keep changing stuff. So we have, I mean, we're guilty of that, but that's a reason. So if we see, and we're seeing the figures, and compared to one, for instance, when we launched the Android version, this is growing faster in its infancy, But also we had some help from Microsoft. We got featured in a few stores around. So we had a good marketing push, which helped us. So if the figures keep growing that way, we'll probably decide to bring a programmer inside the team, a Windows programmer inside the team, and then push forward in that direction. I mean, mobile is definitely our top priority for the years to come, and Windows Phone is the number three platform as of today. So we have to be on that.
Yeah, and it's certainly more popular outside of the United States. So I mean, so what's the opportunity that you see given the new app that's coming to the podcast, you know, experience on Windows Phone made by the company? Do you see more users kind of moving over to adopting like your platform versus using what's built into the phone, or have you seen any kind of movement in that way?
I don't really know. That's a good question. We'll just stay there and see what happens. The fact is that we tend to think of ourselves as a platform geared towards the producers, but of course the thing that I think we're unique in the fact that we are basically an end-to-end platform where we also look at the consumers, even though we're open. We actually allow our producers to publish their content on any platform out there, mm-hmm. and a lot of our users get hundreds of thousands of downloads on iTunes and everywhere, and it's totally fine with us because our business is on the producer. The thing is that the app we have on Windows Phone is for the consumers, and it's good for us to get people who wants to consume content on our own platform because they become aware that our product exists, and they eventually might decide that they want to start creating something themselves. Our idea has been since the beginning that we wanted to lower the bar for people to start podcasting, and that's what we're still doing at this time. So I think I haven't answered your question, Rob.
That's okay. No, it's fine. I think you did.
I have no answer. Yeah.
I wanted to also kind of change the topic and kind of move towards content creation. And I know that, you know, the foundation of your company has been around creating content and consuming content. And I guess what's your thought at this point about the quality of the content that's being mainly produced on the phone, correct? Is that, that's where most of the content creation side is coming from on with you guys? And where do you see us kind of in the spectrum of quality of audio and that type of stuff?
So to be honest, actually most of the content created on our platform is created either on desktop or on tablets. There's a minority created on the phone, actually. I'm puzzled. I, frankly speaking, I don't know why, but most of our content producers still love to produce content on desktop. And I think we all agree that the pieces of content that you were able to create on your smartphone probably are not going to be of the same quality of the content you're going to create in a studio, especially because you tend to be maybe on the go and you don't have a high quality mic with you or a mixer. Yep. The thing is, what we've said is that for a lot of use cases, they are good enough. So there are some use cases when listeners or consumers want to get fresh content and get a lot of it, have quick updates and all the stuff, and quality is an issue, but not as big. I mean, the difference from a studio like quality content and something you can create on the phone is not that big. So and people are willing to consume that kind of content anyways. That's my take. I don't know. What's yours?
Well, I guess I guess it gets back to my perception has been is that the Apple, the iPhone and the iPad have been the best kind of audio quality devices out there on the mobile side, and I don't know about the Android side if the built-in microphones or those are at the same quality level as Apple to kind of produce the best quality content around kind of this content creation. I can see this kind of this next wave of podcasting or user created content really being created around these really terrific mics that are built into these mobile devices. And are you seeing kind of that same trend? Is that why you really got into this? Is because you saw that kind of long term trend that the recording devices were going to become so ubiquitous that it's potential that a lot of people could start producing content?
That's a good question. I don't think we got into this because we had this clever and smart vision. We actually, to be honest, we got into this because we thought it was possible. And when we were thinking of creating Spreaker, it was back in 2009, around 2009 and 2010. And mobile was big, but not as big as it is today. And so we were thinking web first. And the idea that we had was, okay, eventually the connected car is going to get out there. People are going to be able to choose what to listen to in their car, whether it's FM radio, whether it's streaming like Pandora or Spotify. Why don't we create something new that that lives in between? I mean, it gives people the ability to listen to pieces of content that can be live, they can be user-generated, they can mix in mainstream content that we source elsewhere. And that was the original idea of Spreaker. And then we saw what was happening, and we just played with it. We played with the technology. And we had the idea that people would use their mobile phone to get out there and create, I don't know, live play-by-play broadcast of Little League baseball or other stuff. Some people are doing this, some are not, but we just create stuff and see how people use it. But to be honest, the wave that you mentioned is not there, and I'm not even sure it's going to happen. I mean, if I have to decide on our own audience, most of our users today are concerned and are trying to create something which is actually a bit more the old way, having a studio, trying to create a regular podcast or show, and very few people are experimenting with the power of casual podcasting. So I don't know if we're going to get there or if there's some mainstream interest. There's definitely some long tail interest, but I'm not sure it's going to be mainstream.
One thing that I've seen and that I've been coming across my desk, because I also do, you know, a tech site, you know, the stuff like from iRig plugs right into the phone and and it gives you a little better quality. And I'll say a little, because, you know, the mic is, the mic isn't bad. Don't get me wrong. And they got some cool tools, but at least it gives you something to hang on to instead of the phone, or you can put it in a holder. You know, is this the solution? I don't know. But there's a whole bunch of stuff that's out right now that, you know, helps you improve the audio quality. So there's a lot of companies thinking that people are going to be creating content on the phone. So they're, you know, they're bringing them, you know, folks at Blue Mic, and you know, they're known for great mics, and iRig and other groups are doing that. So, you know, they must think that there's a market for it.
Oh, I'm sure they do. Actually, I know iRig very well because they are kind of our neighbors. They're from Italy as well. Even they, it doesn't show on the package, but they're from Modena. And I visited their company. I've had a lot of talks with them, and they started with the musician audience mostly. So their original audience were people having a guitar. So their first product for the iPhone was this jack, this connector for guitars and MIDI things. And then they moved to the karaoke public, But now they have seen some interesting growth in the podcasting market, and I purchased one of those mics myself before even knowing the guys. And then I checked in the box and said, "Oh, these guys are basically like 20 miles from our office. Let's go and visit them." Some things definitely moving. I don't want to be the one boasting that I know where this is going. I have no idea, but it's nice to be on board and be part of the ride.
I like it that for me it's just the ease of content creation. I want folks to be able to do it easier, and if they do it, if it's easier for people to create content, they're gonna be able to stick with it longer. They're not going to have to worry setting up something like this, and I think we'll find more of that casual, and maybe even upper end podcaster. My interest in what you guys have been doing recently is a little bit different focus than what Rob is, and I wanted to get the full skinny on this because I think there's even questions in the podcasting space about your customized apps. I'm just enamored with the idea that that I can pay you guys, I think it's $99 a year per device to have a customized app. Now, the question is, and the question that a lot of people have been asking me, and I'm glad you're on with us today, is can those of us that are syndicating with you, and you guys are just pulling in our feed, can we get the app, or do we have, where's the engagement level do I need to be with Spreaker to get the app?
As long as you have content on Spreaker, it goes on the app. So basically, when you feed out your RSS feed on Spreaker, what we do, due to a technical reason, actually, it's like SoundCloud. We have to copy your files, right, keep them updated, but serve them from our server. It's a technical reason. We serve them through CDN. We need to have a local copy to ensure that the delivery is always there and give the best,
right,
the best experience to our users. But yeah, a lot of people just imported their existing RSS feeds into Spreaker and they made the app.
Ooh.
Is this worth it? Is this something good for you? My answer is, I want to be totally honest, it depends.
Yeah.
Because if you are an individual podcaster and your audience is not a big, you're not going to get big download numbers. It's going to be a great branding opportunity. So if you're podcasting for your small business, I would say definitely do it, because it's yet another touch point, something totally branded that you have up there. If you're an amateur, an individual podcaster, maybe not. Maybe you're going to get a few tens of downloads, 5 stars, because all your friends are going to download it and give you 5 stars and great ratings. But then you're not going to get additional audience because of that. All the people that have bought it as of today on Spreaker are networks. So networks of more than one individual connected together, and they want to have a place where, totally branded place, where all their pieces of content are. And I think it makes perfect sense in this case. So it's up to you.
So that's cool. That's really cool. And I think this is smart. And I like the price point too. I think you guys have, in all honesty, no one can create an app on their own for anywhere near maybe 1/50th of that cost.
Just publishing the app on the Apple Store will cost you $100 a year for the developer account.
Yeah.
So we can even give you the binary of the apps. You have both options. If you want to publish it yourself, we'll give you the binary. But you have to pay the developer account. Otherwise, we publish it for yourself, and it's for you, and it's all in the package. Yeah.
So if I set up the developer's account, you're going to do what? You're going to give me the binary to publish?
Yeah.
Wow.
For both iOS and Android.
Okay, so you're not giving me the source code. You're just giving me the compiled version, right?
Compiled. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we could even give you the source.
Yeah. Because I was going to say, you're not doing that. I was like, oh my God, don't do that.
Giving away the keys to the store.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
You can even have people, a couple of guys asked this, and we figured that they wanted to have people paying for the app. Because if we publish it for you, we're going to publish this as a free app. But let's say that you want to fund your podcast and ask everyone, I don't know, a couple of dollars per download, you can do it. You can get the binary, publish it, and price it at $1.99 and see what happens.
Yeah, I think this is brilliant, and that really clears up a lot of questions that I had on it. So you guys can actually do network too. So we just tell you which shows to include in the app, and you know what would be really nice is on your guys' webpage, why don't you guys link to a couple of apps that you've got in the store so we can, you know, download and sample it. I'd like to really play with it a little bit. I think a lot of
that
folks would too.
Sense actually. We have been sending out emails to people linking that, but we haven't done that in the store. So we have to ask permission to our users, of course.
Yeah.
If you
I'll be happy to pay the $99. You guys can use mine as the guinea pig.
Todd.
I'm an opportunist. Sorry.
He's a businessman. He's looking for an opening here. Yeah.
It's good to be on board early. As if you come on board, I mean, I'd be glad to do so.
Cool.
But you can just go on the App Store and look for Spreaker.
Okay.
Thing is, most of our most of the apps are published under one of our accounts. We have two on the App Store, and you're gonna find a lot of apps. They are all look alike. They just have different branding and different graphics and stuff. The app is very, very simple. So one app is one show, actually, and the app allows you to listen to all the episodes, the past episodes, listen to the live episode if there's anything being broadcast live, and you can also chat with in real time with the show creator, with the host. In order to do so, the listener will have to sign up, otherwise no sign up is required, and that's all there is.
That's nice. And it ties back. I think this is smart. I really do. And what it does is, as you guys know, there's only one other company making apps for podcasters. Now, the question I have for you is that the other company ran into trouble by making individual apps that an Apple kind of shut them down after they got to a certain size. And now that company has to have a base app and a secondary app. You got to load two pieces to get the player. Are you worried about Apple shutting down single show apps, or have you?
I think what worries Apple most is the quality of the stuff that they get on their App Store and the fact that it doesn't explode. I think that our price point is good. It's good enough so that not too many people will create apps. So we're not going to see, unfortunately, apps in the millions being published under our account.
I think you might be surprised at the numbers you're going to get, because, you know, I think there was some questions on what level of service you had to have at Spreaker. So I think, I don't know. We'll see. I'm hoping this will drive more business to you.
Hopefully, yes. And the other thing is that we invested a lot, and we're still investing in making sure that the app, even though it's simple, but it's high quality. So everything is always updated. If Facebook or Twitter, for instance, since we allow you to sign up with Facebook or Twitter, if you want to chat with the host, change their SDK, we keep everything updated. So that the quality is always good, and Apple would not have anything to say about the quality. If they at some point have anything to say about the number of apps we are publishing on the store, well, hopefully they get back to us first, and then we'll see what to do. But so far, so good. They have approved quickly every app we have submitted, and they're a good number so far. They can be more, but they're already a good number.
I think
so. You said that there's podcast networks that are doing this. Is those podcast networks just putting out individual apps for each of their shows, or is there an option to aggregate multiple shows in one app?
Well, there's not that option at the stage, but the networks that did so actually on Spreaker, they I don't know why, but they had created a single show and they were going on with their own scheduling, but under the same container, under the same show. And they just created episodes with different titles. So it totally worked for them.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But I think we can talk about that. I mean, this would be a level of customization that we are will be prepared to do, because I understand it's going to be not practical to have an app for each one of your show if you want to have a lot of different shows branded under the same umbrella. So let's talk. This is something we couldn't price or put there
right.
in a simple page for the consumer.
Yeah. I see all kinds of possibilities here, so I'm definitely going to be emailing you after the show, and maybe we have a business discussion on this too. But it's very, very cool. I think it's smart. I think the price point is, to be honest with you, I think the price point's incredible. I think you know, some folks may cringe. I don't, not at all. You know, if it had been $250, I would have still thought it was a good price point on a per year basis. Now, you know, that, you know, that some people say, Todd, we'll shut up, but.
No more than two.
Ka-ching.
No. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, it's cool. It really, really is. So, yeah, look, I'm glad you guys are doing this. Now, and it's cool too that the guys can go ahead and if they want to do live, can they do live from within the app, or does the app just cover the live?
So the app is just for consumption.
Gotcha.
If you want to do live, you need to do live on Spreaker.
Yep.
So either use the Spreaker app or the Spreaker website.
Gotcha. Wow. Very interesting.
So did I hear you say that a user of the app can give audio feedback to the show through the app? Is that?
No.
Did I hear that right? No.
Text feedback. Just text feedback. We have a real-time chat and stuff. Right now it's just texting.
Yeah, I think this is... Boy.
Yeah.
Gears are rolling here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You totally see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting... direction. I think that kind of audio feedback might be an interesting direction for you to go, since you already have kind of that technology basically already enabled to create a conversation between the audience and the show more. And
so what we're developing right now. I shouldn't disclose it, because if we change the time frame, everyone's going to get back to us and be very pissed because we took longer. But it's something we've been looking at since inception of Spreaker. We want to have people to do call-in shows easily.
Right.
Right now, all these people, I mean, you can do a call-in show on Spreaker, but you need to have a setup like Todd here has or something. Even maybe simpler, but you need to have some external devices or do some stuff. So we're definitely incorporating that into our native application. Actually, something, I don't know if you guys know it, but we released a native broadcasting application for Mac and Windows in December. It's still in beta, so it's not official, and you cannot find it on the website. But our beta testers have been testing it for almost 6 months right now. And we're going to release it officially pretty soon, probably within the month. And we're going to add to this app the ability to do call-in shows. So people will be able to call you on the phone or on Skype and get live with you through the app.
The
next step will be to do this on mobile devices.
Home run.
Yeah.
This is going to be a home run for you guys to do that. I'm serious, because, and especially if you can keep the quality up.
Yep, that's the key.
There's, you know who the players are out there that are doing call-in. I feel, are you ready? Because, you know, when the word gets out, I think you're going to get swarmed, because as I know it right now, there's only two, and maybe I'm wrong, there's only two other players out there. And, you know, one of them, the audio quality, in my opinion, is atrocious. And the other one, and I don't think they do things sexy. I think it's pretty ugly. The other one is been around for a long time that most people don't even know about. That's TalkShoe. But I don't even think they have an app. So This is big. I think you guys are gonna, hit a home run with this.
Well, I think Todd, the audio quality issue that you raise is partly to do with a lot of the legacy platforms. You know,
the one
that you're referring to has been using phone calls as a basis for show creation, and we all know how horrible the audio quality is on mobile phone calls. It's just crazy bad. So it's basically turning off that capability.
Right.
I mean, and making any kind of show creation in a platform like this, you know, over the network, not on a phone call.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You know, if you guys are going to set yourselves apart on this, and those other players,
We have to deal with two big issues, I think. One is ease of use.
Yeah.
The platform you're referring to, since it uses the phone network, everyone knows how to operate a phone. While we can make things as simple as we can, but it's going to be something that people will have to learn eventually. And
That's right. This
is one friction point. The other friction point, it's more related to the technology, and it's latency. It's tough. You see what happens on Skype, what happens on Hangout. It's tough to synchronize perfectly a few people talking at the same time on the same line. But we can solve this. We can solve the technological glitches. Eventually we'll be able to make everything run smoothly. We need to do a good work with the user experience. That's probably the hardest part.
Yeah, it's always the hardest part, because what looks good to you and makes sense is much, you get a much different reaction from the public. You know, anyway, I deal with these UI issues all the time, and you know, I hate to really say it, but we've had to make something so blatantly simple that it just sometimes drives me crazy, because you definitely have a group of people today creating content that are not, absolutely not technically inclined. You know, they use a browser, they use a word processor, they use Excel, they may read Gmail. That's about and maybe do some editing of photos. That's the extent of their computer savviness, you know, and you would think it would be, you know, people would be completely enamored at this point and they know how to use technology, but they just don't.
But Todd, that's where the opportunity is.
Oh, yeah.
To actually grow the space. I mean, look at what happened to YouTube when they made tools so simple and smart.
Yeah.
You know, teenagers were starting to create content because it was just as simple as pressing a button and having a webcam. You know, it was just so simple.
Record, publish.
And that's exactly how it needs to be. Yeah.
Wow. That's exciting. And I could see where people will be excited about this product. So you think it may be in about a month then, huh? Wow.
I said in about a month.
He's not making any promises.
So and just as a disclaimer here, whenever I say a month, it ends up being three. So it's just that happens at my company too. So, you know, those of you out there, they have the high expectations. You know, the programmer says a month, and you automatically multiply it by three or four, and then you have to take another factor on top of that. It's just.
Well, it's great because I didn't say anything actually. So maybe I would have said three and you have to multiply that by three. But the goal is definitely by fall this year we'll be there.
Yeah. It's, the development thing, I understand it can be challenging because, as I say, developers always go into these rabbit holes. You know, you're working on one part of the code and you know, it's supposed to be fixing that. And then 3 hours later, you're like, what are you working on? You're like, well, I'm down over here. I'm like, how'd you get there? You're supposed to be over here. And I'm like, well, I saw this need to be tweaked here and that could have been changed and I had to be adjusted. And yeah, so, you know, you add an additional 5 hours to the planning timeline.
Well, and also, you know, fires burn,
something
breaks or whatever. And that pulls those developers. I mean, I see that all day long with stuff that happens, you know, on on the platform that I'm working on now. So you're always, you know, you, I mean, you spend part of your time just fixing things that have gone awry, especially, you know, and this gets back to what we were talking about before is the factor of human error.
Yeah.
You know, it's not necessarily that the code is bad. It's that humans make mistakes when they use code. And that has domino effects.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just like our shopping cart, you know, where we've had a new shopping cart in work for a while. And every time we get close, you know, I'm like, okay, make sure, go back through this thing again and let's relook at it to make sure that we're, you know, because the shopping cart, you don't want to screw up. This is something that, you know, it's, you don't want 2 weeks from now to be the subject of a news article of having a, you know, an excess, you know, some sort of an injection hack or something. So,
you know, or a breach.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, whereas a normal product that's not tied to a financial thing, you may be able to push it out early and fix it on the fly. But, you know, it's a financial stuff. You just can't afford it. And then going through the compliance scans and everything, it takes time. So it's, you know, there's always stuff that comes up in development. But anyway, we don't need to spend, got down that road here. So how's the relationship then going with iHeart? How are you guys doing with them?
Well, we're doing well. I mean, it's ups and down, of course, like every relationship. But our users are happy with the distribution with iHeart. I cannot disclose any number because we're under a contract and an NDA with Clear Channel. But a lot of our users are getting pretty good numbers on of plays on iHeart. What I probably think is going to change this year is the fact that we'll still send users through iHeart, but the period when they got a free pass on Spreaker is expiring. So unfortunately, people will still be able to be included in iHeartRadio, but they will still have to pay for the subscription on Spreaker if needed, because they can even be free users on Spreaker and go on iHeart as well. The good news is that since their subscription would not be paid by Clear Channel anymore, they will retain everything they had on Spreaker, including the RSS feed, the ability to syndicate their show on YouTube, on SoundCloud, on every other platform. And this is something we had to do last year. I mean, taking away all these capabilities for people who got included into the iHeart show, because Clear Channel was paying for the bill. Now that they are not, we're pretty happy to leave everything open for the users.
So just so I'm clear, so for example, if I'm, you know, I'm doing my show like I am now, I'm not doing live on your platform, and I want to have my show listed on Spreaker, what is the cost then to be listed, and, you know, how do you work that? Because I know you have the different broadcasting plans for the live, but how does the syndicators work?
It's the same with packages. The only thing you're paying for is storage.
Basically.
So you can go on Spreaker today and list your RSS feed on Spreaker. We'll start import your episodes from the most recent to the oldest,
right,
and stop when you hit your quota. It's 10 hours of broadcast of shows with the free plan and quota.
I got you.
If you want to have more episodes at the same time on Spreaker, you need to purchase a package with 100, 500, 1,000 hours or whatever.
Gotcha.
If you don't, just delete all the episodes and import new ones, and we're pretty happy to list the last 10 hours of your content.
Gotcha.
Having done this, you can apply at any moment for being included in iHeartRadio. They will review your show, decide if they want to pick it or not. So far, if they picked it, they also gave you the top level plan on Spreaker for free. This is now expiring.
I see.
So this is the only thing which changes. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that changes is that if they pick you, good, you'll be listed on iHeartRadio on their app and the website as well, and you keep your full features on your Spreaker profile. And once this is done, you can apply for the app, you can do whatever. So you can have the custom app even if you are a free user on Spreaker. The only limitation that you have being a free user on Spreaker is the storage,
okay,
in your case. so, and other stuff like statistics, but you might not be interested in that stuff, live broadcasting.
Right. So when,
yeah, I think that the last time that we talked, you were saying that so you could import your existing podcast feed into Spreaker. Spreaker would, I think at the time you said that eventually that feed would be updated automatically in Spreaker. Mm-hmm. So did that actually happen?
It happens. It stops when you hit your quota, though. So when you hit your quota, we stop the synchronization. We tell you, hey, you need to either delete some stuff or increase your storage, and then you can click a button and restart the synchronization. So
I see.
Whatever. I mean, it's pretty easy, and everything is automatic.
So you don't roll the, you don't just push the old out. You have to go in and delete. I got you.
Yeah, you have to go and delete what you specifically want to delete. It's a bit of friction. It's a good reminder that, hey, you know that maybe you might consider upgrading, because we consider ourselves usually, and for most users, this is true, their first platform. So we want to host your content. We want to store your being your primary source for distribution. But it's okay for us if we're not. But if we're not, there are some limitations you need to be aware of. But with our plan, the $39 a year, the Honor Talent Plan, you get already 10 times the storage, so 100 hours plus the statistics, the live broadcasting, and stuff like that. So this converts into like $3 plus a month for 100 hours of storage. I think you probably have most because you have been doing this for a while.
Yeah.
But for most of the podcasters that we see on iTunes, 100 hours is already a lot, actually.
Right. So the other question, that something that was a topic that we talked about last time, have you guys made any progress on the response ping, kind of like Stitcher does, to send any type of analytic data back out into the system at all? Have you guys done anything on that?
We have seen what Stitcher does, and actually they have, if I'm not mistaken, because we've checked the web, they have switched, and now they serve content straight from your URL. So that's why you get the data, because they don't stream content. They just pull it and stream it directly from your own server.
I wasn't aware they made that change. That's interesting.
I don't know if they changed it or it always been like that. It's easy to monitor that on the web, and they definitely do this on their web product. I'm not sure they do this on their mobile product, but I tend to think they do. But it's harder to monitor whether the source is coming from on a native application. And so you basically get all the statistics and the user agent field they send to you, Stitcher, so you can even monitor what is happening. You will not be able to see that on Spreaker the way we work, because we download the content once and we serve it through our own CDN. So the data is yours, it's public, but you have to log into Spreaker to see how many downloads or streams your content has made.
Yeah, it still makes it troubling to be able to do that as a comprehensive reporting back to advertisers, though. So I still encourage you guys to think about implementing something that will allow your, and I know you sell, you know, your analytics as part of your higher plan, and that would kind of negate that from a, you know, basically because they could get that feature third party wise, but you know, it's still something we're asked all the time, is can I get my Spreaker stats combined with what we have? So, you know, maybe they're, I don't know, maybe we should talk, and maybe they could come up with some sort of an API to get some of that data
or
something.
Maybe, or maybe it's even easier. I mean, I was talking with Rob about this the other week. I think we want to, in general, I mean, we want to help podcasters, not just because we're good people, but we think there's good business in doing that. And one of the things that podcasters always want is audience and distribution and the access to audience. And it's good for us because if we also promote our platform as a distribution channel, we get noticed by more people who eventually will become our customers. So I am thinking actually that we might include some of the Stitcher-like characteristics in Spreaker as well. So becoming a bit more than a distribution platform, And this is something we're definitely going to explore down the line, because we have a unique relationship with our content producers on the platform, because they use the same platform for production and then consumption. We have the ability to do live broadcast, and we already have a lot of metrics and information about how people are consuming podcasts. So the next step would be, okay, why don't we try and see if we're able to solve the problem of distribution and discovery. And this is something we're definitely going to explore down the line.
Robin. So,
and this basically, to get back to you, will solve your problem, because we'll do the same thing as Stitcher does, serving podcasts from your site, and you'll see the statistics.
Yeah. The challenge then you then run into is definitely having, you know, because I think probably what some of it is you guys can also monitor the encoding rates and make sure, because, you know, we get, as you know, there's some folks out there that are, you know, I found one guy the other day that was encoding at 512, and I'm like, why are you doing that? You know, and I'm like, and then
just chewing up bandwidth.
and then I was talking with another guy that was on the other end. He was doing it at 32, and I'm like, you know, wow. That's, you know, that's probably too low. Let's find a happy medium here. And but I think the majority of folks are encoding 64 and 128. But the mobile experience is getting better, so maybe the encoding rate's not as critical anymore. I don't know. Maybe not. But
well, I mean, Todd, if you want to, I mean, we can quickly talk about that, because it's probably an important topic. You know, I know Podcast One puts out a lot of their shows at 64K. But I also am, you know, personally, I'm a believer in somewhere between 96 and 128 is really, I think, the future sweet spot for audio podcasting, just to kind of get to that higher quality level. But I'm also surprised that more people aren't using joint stereo as their choice, because it gives you a stereo kind of audio experience, but at a much lower kind of file size or right. Bandwidth usage. So so I see some shows doing 96, you know 128, but 64, it's all about setting expectations with your audience. The problem that I've seen is that if you launch a show at 128, you can't decide to go back to 64. Because there's going to be a lot of audience that are going to be upset at you for changing the quality of their experience. If you launch a show, launch it at where you want to be and keep it there. That's my advice. I don't know, Todd, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, for about the first 5 years, I did 64K, and for about the last 4 years, I've been at 128. So. I did do a switch at one point, and also I think it has a lot to do with your recording tool. I've never, you know, everyone talks about Audacity, and I'm not a big fan of Audacity, because I think its encoding is, well, for a word, I think its encoding is shit as compared to Adobe Edition. You know, for $99, you can buy, or $149, you can buy a high quality, and this is, you know, again, just going back to studio recording, not phone recording, but you can get a great recording package that has a great MP3 encoder in my opinion, gives you a much better quality encode, and it's small. So, yeah. You know, that's my opinion. I've never... You know, and it's so some, it depends on the recording tool you're using. But, you know, I guess we should ask Francesco what the encoding rate, what is the Stitcher? I mean, excuse me, what is the Spreaker? Excuse me, sorry about that. What is the Spreaker? The producers, what are they encoding at?
We do MP3, 128, joint stereo.
Yep. See, right there. Same thing, smart. Rob. Joint stereo. Yep.
It's good. I mean, it's slightly different because we do streaming.
Right.
So we do both streaming and download. I still think 128 today is a bit heavy for streaming on mobile in many countries. not every country we serve in the world has 4G LTE and stuff like that, and data plans tend to be pretty expensive in some countries. So we totally see in countries, for instance, like Spain, where we have a pretty big user base, probably 85% of our users download the content, so they never experience the live broadcasting stuff. They just download the content from the RSS feed as a podcast. While in other countries where data plans are cheaper and they work, users on mobile just stream 128 with no problem.
You know, Rob, that's something we haven't talked about at all. You know, we know that what's happening in the United States with the shift and how people are consuming the content on the fly. In other words, streaming it. They're really downloading it, but they're streaming it. It's interesting to think about that, especially, you know, I know my show is where it's largely consumed, and it definitely would affect maybe 13% or so of my listeners that are outside the English-speaking world, I guess for a better word, in countries that are, you know, run the gambit. I would imagine that some of them have a harder time than others. I hadn't thought about doing two encodes on audio. I don't think I will, but because I haven't had complaints, but it is an interesting discussion point.
Well, I mean, you're thinking about maybe doing a version of the show that's like maybe 96 or 64. Is that what you're thinking?
I don't know. I don't think I don't get complaints, so I guess I'm not going to go. I don't think I'll go back if I get enough, and it's. But then again, are they just not listening? You know, that's another thing too. Did they give up and say, "Oh, the show's too big"? I don't know. It's an interesting. I haven't thought about that too much.
Well, I think one factor I think that holds back podcasting on mobile a little bit is battery life, and I think we've talked about this before. But one of the big trends here is that phones are getting larger in size, which I've noticed. You know, I don't know, with my Lumia 1520, that I get better battery life out of a bigger phone because there's enough room to put a bigger battery in there. But I tend to still listen and watch more podcasts on my Surface tablet, like on the airplane, than I do on my phone, because I'm always concerned about my battery life. So, you know, I think battery life could be a significant factor, and I think the growth of the consumption of podcasts. You know, and I'm not sure when that's going to make this big change or not, but I see it in my own podcast consumption. I don't know about you guys.
Hey, Rob, I've got a solution for the battery life issue.
Yeah. Todd, but that's bigger than my phone.
Yeah, but you know, you got to have power, so you just, you know, you carry that in your second pocket, you know, that's...
Yeah, I would have a power cord running over my shoulder, right? And have this big thing in my pocket.
But it's true. I don't carry that big thing, but it's true. Why are these accessory batteries so popular? Because everyone's running out of juice.
About
3 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm looking at my phone, and you know, I've already got a Mophie on the stupid thing, so I already got at least one full charge. And I'm like, 3 o'clock, I got to kick the switch to recharge the phone. It's.
Yeah. Yeah. So until we fix this problem, I think, you know, the growth on podcast consumption on mobile will always be kind of capped. But once that battery problem is fixed, I think it'll open up more.
I wonder what the annual amount of powers consume this country recharging cell phones. It's got to be a pretty incredible number. You know, you look at the number of devices you have to plug in every day. It's, we've been just about an hour here already. And did you have any wrap-up questions, Rob, that you wanted to ask?
Well, kind of what do you see as the kind of growth trajectory of podcasting as you kind of look out, you know, into the future here? Do you see it reaching some point of faster growth, or do you think it's just going to be steady growth, or is there, are you seeing any thing that's going to hold it back?
Well, hopefully we're going to see growth, because I think that the whole three of us are all passionate about this field, world, and I keep hoping, but I really think there's something that needs to be tweaked somewhere, and I don't have the answer, because if I did have the answer, I would have probably made it into Spreaker already. I think there's, in the audio space in general, there's a lot of things that are happening and a lot of interesting products out there. For instance, I'm a great fan of Umano. I think you guys know the Umano app, where there are the persons who read articles. Do you know the app, guys?
No, I don't. Why don't you tell us about it?
What's the name of it?
Definitely check it out. It's a very interesting application, and basically their point is that they have professional speakers, or most of them are professional speakers, who read for you articles from, you know, TechCrunch or the New York Times, and it's something you can easily listen to during your commute, while you're driving from home to work every day. And the good thing about it, that I like about it, is that the pieces of content are short, and they're newsworthy. It's always something new and something interesting, and you can consume a lot of this. The thing that I don't like is that these are articles that were written, and there's someone who's reading them. So on the point of view of the engagement, they are horrible, just horrible. And so I'm thinking that something better might be done out of this stuff. But I'm really passionate about the transition that I see in podcasting becoming, I don't know, shorter and shorter, and maybe fresher and fresher, where you get hooked, because you always want to go on your phone and check out if there's something new. And this is something I still don't see with podcasts as a consumer. I just have my time of the day when I just want to go and listen to podcasts, but I don't crave getting on my phone to listen to new stuff as I do with Facebook. So if we just want to get to an inflection point, I think we have to pass through some kind of stage like this.
So what was the name of the app again?
Umano. It's like U-M-A-N-O.
U-M-A-N-O.
Okay. Yeah, it means like human in Italian. That's why I am. You know, but it's made in San Francisco, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I've been seeing more and more of the apps come out, you know. Swell and Stitcher are doing this too, where it's kind of short form audio clips, you know, as kind of like being used as almost like a news source, right, or breaking news, or things that trying to use that concept of blending audio with kind of breaking news, you know, alerts. You know, I get constantly pinged by Stitcher on my iPhone with, you know, breaking news stories that are coming out. They're trying to become almost like CNN or something like that. And I think that's an interesting, you know, the whole concept of notifications is really undiscovered territory in the podcasting space. You know, letting users know when there's a new episode or something breaking that's audio, essentially, that you can be sent a notification about, and you know, that connects with you on a regular basis throughout your day. And I guess the thinking is that if it's short, you'll be more likely to listen to it quick between meetings, or, you know, if you're in the car or something like that, versus trying to get users to connect to, you know, a 45-minute podcast or during the middle of the day. I don't know. What's your guys' thoughts on that whole trend that we're seeing?
Well, I know personally that locally, the newspaper that I still subscribe to, because my wife likes reading a newspaper versus doing it digitally. I'm the one reading it online. They send me alerts when there's local breaking news, and I like that. I think it's good. It does prompt me to go to their website and see what's happening. I haven't experienced too much of that with news or podcast apps, but I think it makes a lot of sense. I do like the ability. I do think it is, I wish there was an easier way to, and I know there's services that you can pay for to get this done, but it'd be nice to be able to, every time I hit publish on my show, for it to, you know, send a mobile alert to all my subscribers. And is that cost effective? I don't know. Would it drive more immediate listenership? Maybe. But people are still listening to my personal show on a schedule. They know when they're going to take their hour and 10 minutes to listen to me. So I don't know if it would increase their, maybe just remind the folks that forgot about the show. I don't know. I think it's good, but long format, I don't know if it works as well. I don't know. What do you think, Francesco?
You gave me a pretty interesting idea. So thank you, Todd, for the mobile notification. That's something we might be interested in putting into our custom application, actually.
Well, I think
so. We're thinking about that all the time into Spreaker, and you always have to balance off how invasive you want to be, how pushy you want to be. Because at the end of the day, all as we're doing stuff on the internet, we need to have to get as many eyeballs on our content as often as we can, and we'll want to get viral and want to get sticky, but it's tough, and we first don't want to piss our users off.
Right.
The other thing that I'm thinking is that as a consumer, so I tend to think as myself as a consumer, I think there's a lot of things to do. I love audio. I would listen to talk all the time, but when I have some time, it's too hard most of the times to find what I really want to listen to. If I haven't downloaded it, maybe I don't have the ability to stream it because I'm in the subway or somewhere else. So there are so many problems as of today that they are limiting the spreading of this technology. So I think something has to happen. And when it happens, this will basically take off. And so on the consumption part, I definitely see these problems, and that's all that there is. On the production part, I don't know if the content that we'll be listening to is going to be podcasts, or this is going to be content produced by, I don't know, bigger production houses. I bet on podcasts because I see that the production companies that have been laying off a lot of people and downsizing a lot because there is not business anymore, and this democratization and disintermediation means that also that people are going to be able to produce good quality content in their houses. But I want to consume it, and I'm sure there's already something out there, and I cannot find it when I need it. I think this is the biggest problem.
You know, Rob, one of the first products that we launched and that we, you know, ultimately shut down was a site called Podcaster News. And it was a site that we originally envisioned would be local producers producing local news content. It was, you know, every genre that we'd normally find in podcasting, but it would be short 3-minute snippets of content. And it was really, launched it long before it'd become popular, like the CNN, you know, iReporters and those folks that do that. But, you know, we thought there would be a great market for that. And really there was, it at the time, you still had to sit down in front of a mic and do stuff, where as if we had thought this idea, today it'd be much easier to launch that because you could just have the phone and say, here I am in such and such place. But I don't know if anyone could be counted on to do curated. I think a site where it just basically takes a lot of stuff might work well, where, you know, it's just a continuous stream of user generated content of news. But then, you know, you got to battle the spammers that are going to try to use it as a marketing platform. But I think there's, you know, we're the ones that are going to be on the scenes of anything going on in the world today first. And then, you know, there's going to be a mobile device there. The question is, can you get the scale you need to make something like that work?
Yeah, I think that the part that changes a lot is that we're still in the early days of having smart notifications come to us about things that we care about. And I think that's the big thing that's coming as these smartphones get smarter about knowing what we like and what we want to get when we want to get it and have context to what we're doing to be smart enough to know that I'm driving in the car, I can prompt you to do this through the console of the vehicle or whatever. There needs to be intelligence that's driving this notification. And then you need to, as a user, you need to educate your device to know what kind of stuff that device needs to deliver to you. But that can be gathered over time. I think a good example of a company that's really thinking a lot about this is Swell. And I think that's a good example that I think other software companies need to think about as they think about what the next generation of this audio consumption platform needs to be like is having more intelligence around context. And I know we've talked about this on the show before, and being able to notify that user that there's something there for them to consume. If they can't consume it right at that moment, then maybe put it in a queue that they can come back to or something like that.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you guys are doing great things over at Spreaker. Yep. You're going to be seeing my order for two apps come in here this morning or this afternoon or this evening your time. And I look forward to seeing how this works with you guys. And I'm excited about your upcoming software release. I think it's going to be, I think you're going to hit a home run here. You're going to hit a market that a lot of questions being asked in the community. People are always asking, where do I go? Where do I go? Where do I go to do this? And I think so long as you can, you know, work through the quality, make sure the quality stays high, I really do think you're going to have a home run there. And I think people are gonna flock to it, to be honest with you. So, and I like there's an alternative now to get an app. You know, I don't have to go out and spend $5,000 to have an app developer develop me an app.
Or more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you like it, Todd. Well, check it out.
Yeah.
I'll be glad to send you a couple of links where you can download some example apps made by other users and tell us what you think.
Yeah, I'm just gonna order it and see what we'll rock and roll. We'll just go for it. I think you know, podcasters need to think. You know, even if you're here's the key though. This is the thing that I like to tell people. You know, even if you're a brand new show, you should have advertising in it because it gives you. There's a perception thing, and if you're a small show, you know, now that it's not a big price. At least my opinion, to have an app, you should have an app because it's a perception thing. And if you get some listeners, great. If you don't, you've got the link on your website. People can subscribe to it.
I mean, Todd, at the very least, do an Amazon affiliate program ad
right.
or something
right.
like that.
Right.
I mean, that's not hard to do.
Not at all, you know?
Yeah.
And, but I think the space is growing. I've seen there's more buzz right now than there has been in a long time. And I only see good things for the space. So just, keep on doing what you're doing. I think we're all down in the trenches trying to, you know, figure this thing out. And this is part of the reason why we do this show is to, you know, help people listen, get ideas off the show because we want people to be able to take that back, go, and we want to grow your business too. And there's plenty of business for all of us. That's for sure.
Yeah.
So,
well, thanks so much. And thanks for taking time out of your Saturday evening there. We appreciate your time, Francesco. We really do.
Pleasure.
Yeah.
And here, the sunset's like at 10:30 this time of the year. So still plenty of daylight.
That's so great. Thank you so much, Francesco. It was great to speak with you again on the show. You guys are doing some really amazing stuff, and keep up all the great work.
Yes, absolutely.
We're all fans.
Thank you.
All right, take care. I hope he didn't feel like I cut him off there.
It's all right.
Well, that was interesting. So really what it boils down to, Rob, I'm just looking at this. Let me close you. Is that, at a minimum, you're going to have a $4.99 a month or $20 a month plan with Spreaker plus the $99 to get the app or each app. So still, in my opinion, no brainer.
Well, and I think that the big thing that I really, really like about Francesco and Spreaker is that they're thinking about real business models.
Yeah.
I mean, they are trying to build a business that's generating revenue that will last, right?
Yeah.
And I know that's been our complaint about the space for a long time. There's a lot of players that try and come into this and do stuff for free and don't stick around, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe what he's building is something that's going to have legs in the long run.
Yeah.
And that's good.
And, and you're going to have 100 hours of your content on there for $5 a month. You can have 10 hours for free. And that's probably for most shows because of this. Most shows don't have the long tail. 10 hours is probably sufficient for a lot of shows. If you want to get the 100 hours on there, go with the. But I wish they would roll it off in the end. So I'm going to have to work on him on that. making an option so you just kill it when it gets to the point where there's...
Yeah.
And that way I don't have to come over here every whip stitch and kill 10 shows. But I understand his thought process there as we keep people coming back and seeing what they're doing and keep them in the first and foremost in their mind. I wish they would... Still, the stats thing, if they start pulling data directly from the websites, then that'll solve the situation. But it doesn't look like they want to budge on reporting numbers back yet.
Yeah, I think that is a little bit of a challenge, and to talk a little about Stitcher's situation. I know I didn't really get a chance to comment on this, but... from my understanding is that Stitcher on mobile is still caching audio and Swell is also doing that also.
Right.
So certain shows have contacted them directly and asked to be taken off of their cache so they get accurate numbers. I don't know, the last thing that I heard that wasn't entirely opened up to every show. And it could very well be, and I don't know this for the fact that the shows that are pulling through the Stitcher website could be pulling directly from the servers. So that makes sense. One of the reasons that that Stitcher was doing that cache was to deliver a much more reliable playback experience on mobile.
But it's very, very expensive.
Yeah, it is, I can see their point, but I can also see where it creates a lot of friction with the content providers, because especially shows that are monetizing.
Yeah.
And those are the ones that are usually most vocal about wanting to control their distribution.
Yeah.
Are the ones that are using their log files as reporting, as you know, and as you do, to campaigns, with advertisers.
Because frankly, I can't bill it if I don't have it in my system, and I can't pull a third party number, because I don't know how they've done the math. So, and in reality, though, even looking at Stitcher, for a lot of shows, it's 2 or 3% of their total downloads. So it's not,
it's not a make or break thing.
Yeah, it's not a make or break, but cumulative. And when you have multiple players that are doing that, and what happens when it's 20 or 25%, as these companies grow, you know, then that becomes a real concern at that point, you know. So,
yeah, and it does feel like there's a trend towards more companies coming on the scene doing this practice, right?
Right.
You know, there's now Swell, there's Stitcher, there's, you know, I don't know that Spreaker is doing it, but it's similar, you know, with what they're doing because they are hosting the files. They're taking a cache copy. So it is, you know, I think more and more companies are seeing that there's some sort of an advantage for them to control the actual media file for the either a user experience or maybe they feel like that puts them more in control of being able to insert advertising against content. There's a lot of motivations that exist for a business to get involved in caching and redistributing shows. And I guess that's where the point of friction is happening in the space. That's in some ways, I think, holding it back a little bit is that friction has not been seamlessly resolved yet.
I'm making sure my wife is awake.
Sleeping in, huh?
No, she's not. She's actually supposed to be already out of the house, and I didn't hear too much movement in the house, so...
Oh, okay.
And she answered her phone, so I'm assuming she's awake. So, yeah, usually I can hear him rassing around back in there, but I didn't hear too much.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, I guess I think they're on the right track there. And I'm glad we gave him an idea on that mobile notifications. I hope they bake that in. And I'm surprised they weren't thinking about that already. I can't imagine it hasn't come up in a discussion yet, but maybe not.
So I was down in a kind of an audio festival conference down in San Diego on Wednesday this week. It was an all day live streaming event. If you wanted to watch the full thing, it's about six, seven hours of live streaming that was done over YouTube at the Hivio event, right. HIVIO.com.
Yep.
And I was up on stage with a host of a new show that's done. The Honey Badger's Badass Animal Podcast, the host Randall was up on stage.
What was the H-I, what was it again?
HIVIO.com.
.com.
And it was an all-day session. Oh, okay. You know, every 30 minutes he had Mark Ramsey, who's been on this show, had a different guest on there. He was telling a story. He was telling a story about the opportunity of digital audio and radio. Really, this event was a kind of a convergence type of event, talking about the opportunity of broadcast radio. So the audience that was there was a fairly small group. It was, you know, like maybe 100 plus people, but it was all live streamed.
Right.
And most of the people in the audience had some connection to broadcast radio. There was folks there on, you know, from the podcasting side and the digital side, but it was kind of a convergence kind of a thing, talking about, you know, what does broadcast radio and audio space need to do, to, you know, around talent. And really the story that was told was, you know, marketing, promotion, and then where's the future of talent going to come from for broadcast radio? And the conclusion of that was that it's going to come from places like celebrities that are getting millions of views on YouTube or podcasts that are doing successful, is that over time, and we've talked about this, that talent is going to come from digital first. And so that was kind of the bigger story of what was talked about there. And it really, I think, was an eye-opener to a lot of the broadcast radio folks, because they keep thinking that, you know, the talent's going to come from broadcast radio and go to podcasting.
Right.
And they're the ones that are going to create the next generation talent. But really, in reality, that's not going to happen that way. So we're still seeing this movement from broadcast radio going to podcasts.
Yep.
Right. Becoming more podcasts. But at some point, it's going to go back the other way. Right, the talent's going to come out of digital first and go into radio, and that's what this event really, really focused on talking about.
So you're talking about, before I rudely interrupt you to bring the website up again, you were talking about one group or somebody, someone that was there that's badass, or what was, you were saying something about.
So up on stage with me is part of my part of the session, which was right at the end of the event.
Yeah.
As Mark was telling his story, right, of this progression that's happening. So one of the hosts of a new show on Podcast One, his character's name is Randall, and he does a show called Honey Badger's Badass Animal Podcast. It was about a year ago this whole meme came out from YouTube from this guy. The Honey Badger Don't Care. You know, I don't know if you heard about it
or not.
But it was a pretty popular meme that happened online back there, like about a year ago or so. But he just recently launched a show on our network, and he gets all in. He's basically an actor essentially, right. And he got up on stage and he's really, really funny. He does a fantastic show, and it's really creating. He kind of created almost a new genre in the podcasting space. Around animal podcasts, talking about animals in a humorous and funny way, and a really, really highly produced program. So if you haven't heard it, definitely go to podcastone.com and click on the Honey Badger's Badass Animal Podcast.
I'm sure they covered it all, the business, the metrics, all that stuff. And what was the astonished look on the broadcast, on the digital guy's face? Were they shocked that we're kicking their butt in audience sizes in many markets? Or
I think that was certainly part of it. I think they it's part of that whole kind of culture in the broadcast radio space of thinking that they kind of rule the audio world now,
right?
And it's continuing, but there isn't really any new hot talent coming out of broadcast radio right now.
Right.
It doesn't exist. The up and coming talent is coming out of the digital side, and they're just kind of ignoring it. It's not kind of on their radar, because they're typically not tuned into that. Right. And what's happening on YouTube, in places like that, where there's young stars, young talent that are coming up, that are garnering millions and millions of audience on a pure digital platform, and being able to tap into that. A lot of those talent, if they got a phone call from a big radio market or a big nationally radio syndicator, they would probably be interested in talking to them.
So who
How
was
doing a show?
Who was the who were some of the other folks that were on?
I'm trying to, I wouldn't say that they were big name folks or anything like that. I think if you pull up the site.
I'm looking at
I think it has a list of all of
the. Let me flip over here.
Yes. Like Gary Vaynerchuk was there.
Andrea Resett, YouTube.
Yeah. She's a really, really hot, a YouTube celebrity. I think she's had 100 million views of her videos or something like that.
Don't think I've ever seen a single one. Interesting.
And she just launched a broadcast radio show in the Los Angeles market here just a couple of months ago. I think she's 19 or something like that.
Wow. And then we got Rick Mulletti. Don't know who he is either.
He's an agency buyer. So he's one of those guys that buys campaigns into talent.
Gotcha. Then we've got Robert Rose, CMI.
Yep.
We've got Craig Bruce. I don't know any of these folks. Southern Cross, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
Got Sirius XM guy. We have someone from Pixar.
Yeah, she tells stories. So she's basically a storyteller, right?
And gotcha.
That's that's another big piece of kind of content creation on the broadcast side, and on the digital side is the talent of telling stories. So
it looks like these are the sponsors.
Yep.
So he didn't have a big group of. So how many folks were? How many people did he actually have on that were actually, were you the only podcasting per se that was on the panel, or was there other podcasters that were on?
Yeah, I was the representative from the podcaster space. Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. Well, I'll definitely have to watch the video, I guess. And
it's a long one. Yeah.
8 hours. But you think then at the, did you have any, what was the walk away comment from the folks, do you think?
Well, I think that was exactly like I just said. It was the, where is the future of talent going to come from for radio? And it's not going to come from radio. It's going to come from talent that's developed online first.
Right. Hey, this is kind of funny. Andrew Reset said on what her peers are into, says, we listen to radio. We love 8-Tracks, the app. That's kind of a little bit of a pun. It's kind of like, you know, like stick in the eye, you know, almost a little bit. So
yeah, it is. But that's what kind of that generation likes is to make fun of kind of older technology and older stuff. I mean, that 8-Track app basically is like a, you know, like a mashing app that mashes different music to create something different, right? So it's almost like creating a little bit of user-generated content that's then shared, which is exactly what that generation likes to do. They like to mash stuff up and create something from something, yeah.
Well, that's cool. And, well, anyway, Rob, hey, we're already way long.
We are, aren't we?
Yeah, so let's wrap this thing up. That's cool. Thanks for the report on that. And look forward to consuming that as I can. They need to put that in like 8 1-hour segments audio so we can...
Yeah, I think Mark was going to do that. I think he was going to break up the whole thing into 30-minute videos of each of the presenters. So... yeah, he just hasn't had time to do it yet. It was just on Wednesday.
Yeah, very cool. So anyway, we're not going to be on next Saturday. We'll be off, largely because I'll be in an airplane heading back this way. It's just the time dynamics. You can't get anywhere from anywhere to Hawaii unless you leave early in the morning, and I can't leave Friday morning to come home. So
you're leaving Saturday morning.
Yeah, huh? Leaving Saturday morning, and... I will be in the air about the time this thing is supposed to go live. But
well, Todd, I know what you can do. You can get Wi-Fi on the airplane.
Yeah, that doesn't work over the ocean.
Just do it live on the airplane with me.
Yeah, it doesn't work over the ocean. There is no Wi-Fi over the ocean.
There isn't?
No. You get about 100 miles away from LA, and it's like, boom, that's it. You're done. So
wow. I didn't realize that. I thought maybe they pulled it from satellite or something. It's, but I guess
That footprint. They, you know, the satellites are designed to be over. They point the transponders at landmass. They don't particularly. It's not very cost efficient to use a satellite to point at an ocean. So,
well, they need to have some buoys out there or something like that.
Something. That sounds like a great startup idea, Rob.
It definitely does. Definitely does. Yeah, I heard about those secret underwater fiber connections that broke in the news this week.
Yeah, it's crazy stuff.
Yeah.
But so. And I don't think it shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone on anything anymore. Whatever you can dream of has probably been done. The only problem is now the government can't always use the can't confirm or deny type of statements. So,
yeah, but you're not supposed to know about it, though.
Right. Well, you can speculate, you know, I guess. So,
because it's top secret.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
All right, folks, thanks for being here. You can reach out to Todd or Rob at newmediashow.com. You can follow me, of course, at Geek News. You can follow Rob at Rob Greenlee.
Yep.
And, Rob, good email. Oh, actually, I gave him an email address already. So, hey, everyone, thanks for being here. We'll see you in 2 weeks. And And I hope you guys are enjoying the summer. I know I am. Everyone take care. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Aloha.
Take care. Bye-bye.